Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked for you, more scheduling flexibility, and at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/TheBarn. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TheBarn.
Hey, this is Fred from Cowboy Mouth, and you're listening to the Midwest Mixtape Podcast live from the Barn Studio.
I've no reason for the things I fear, the things that plague me when I see and hear. Dime's a nickel and a nickel's none. I throw myself into the Sunday sun. A summer Sunday when you've been insane. You said you're going, but I said I came. I'm throwing oranges in an apple cart. The ties that bind are tearing me apart. Jenny says, turn off the radio. Jenny says, turn off the light. Jenny says, turn off the video. You beat yourself up to bring yourself down. Let it go, let it go, let it go. Let it go, let it go, let it go.
Hi, and welcome to the Midwest Mixtape Podcast live from the Barn Studio in Southeast Missouri. You got the Mox here, and I'm joined with a special guest online right now. We have Fred from Cowboy Mouth. Fred, how are you, man?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing really well. Excited to have you back in town. You're coming to St. Louis at the Old Rock House. And the date of that, I should have wrote down, but it is in
you
April.
You should have written this down, man. You should have written this down.
I have everything else. Doors are at 7, shows at 8, $30. Excited to have you back in town.
Good. It'll be great. It'll be a lot of fun. The Rock House is always a blast.
Yeah, and it seems like St. Louis is sort of a market that it's pretty treats you pretty well. I think you have a pretty solid fan base here in St. Louis. Is that the case?
I think we do all right. Hey, we had a hit song a few years back that was bigger in St. Louis than anywhere else. It was a song called What You Gonna Do, and the first line is St. Louis Hot Summer. So people have always loved that song around Missouri.
And then, of course, Jenny Says, and, you know, I think 105.7 The Point here in St. Louis is a staple rock alternative station of ours, been around for years, just played the heck out of it, still play the heck out of it. And, you know, do you credit some of that to some of the response that you see in your crowds?
You think? They've been very good to us. In fact, a few years back before lockdown, we played, I think it was their last festival before lockdown. It was great. And it was kind of surprising because we had like an insanely huge crowd, and I don't think they were expecting it. But, you know, I mean, they expect us to do well, but they didn't expect us to do as well as we did. And it was, you know, they kind of woke them up a little bit. Hey, guys, still here, still kicking ass, ain't going anywhere.
You know, obviously from the New Orleans, Louisiana area, we just coming out of Mardi Gras. Is everybody okay? Is everybody fully recovered? Are we good?
If you could just keep it down a little bit, that would really help me out.
Right.
Mardi Gras was great. I actually rode in a parade with my wife and some friends. Mark Bryan from Hootie rode with us, and it was just great. And then we played a big show at the House of Blues the night before, actual Mardi Gras day, packed. It was great. It was just, Mardi Gras could not have gone better.
And you guys have been at this thing for what, over 30 years now, right?
Yeah, like 34 years now.
How has everything changed from the early days? You know,
it's always changing. It is always changing. I mean, you know, when we first started, you know, it was like four of us in a van. And then, you know, we got to the point where, you know, we started, you know, we had some independent records, and then we signed to a major. And that was, you know, that was what it was. You know, had some success, had some hit singles. In the 90s and 2000s, we were signed to two major labels. And then when it became kind of pointless for a band like us to be on a major label, we started just kind of doing our own thing. And then you know, it's always adapting. You know, we've gotten to the point where we don't really do albums anymore. We just put out singles every 3 to 6 months to keep the fan base going. And if something pops, it's great. And if not, I'm not going to worry about it. You know, it's you're always adapting. But the thing about it is that I personally think that I think the future is live music. I don't think the album as a format really exists that much anymore, at least not naturally. I mean, you're always going to have a Taylor Swift, or if the Beatles do a remix, or you know, or something like that. You know, people are going to buy it. You know, but you know, for an artist like us that doesn't have the support of a monolithic global corporation behind them, you know, we're just a bunch of creative types doing our own thing our own way. I think the more material you get, and like the single format, and just offering options, you know, with merchandise and that type of thing. But, you know, we've always put on a kick-ass show. We always will put on a kick-ass show. And that's always been our bread and butter.
And I think your bio even said that you guys average like 250 shows a year. Is that right?
It depends on the year. Some years are like that. Some years are slower. So, you know, and I mean, you know, we have a pretty hefty work schedule, and that's the way we like it. You know, we like to work.
And you hear sometimes bands getting, you know, road worn or just burn out on the road. How do you guys keep it interesting? How does it not become sort of the movie version of the rock and roll lifestyle where it's, you know, hello, Cleveland, and you're in St. Louis? How do you keep it interesting?
When we used to do those long grinding tours, when it'd be like a few months out, you know, you'd be literally out for 3 or 4 months of time. That got really old. Plus, you know, people always look at tour buses as like some sort of status or glamour. And it is nice to have one, I will say that. But I was trapped in that thing for 15 years, you know. Yep. Like, you know, I'm really enjoying what we do is we take a region, and we'll book a bunch of dates in a region. And then we'll just go up and just drive around, you know. And I like being involved with, you know, people in the audience. I like seeing people on a day-to-day basis. You know, I didn't really like the whole thing where you get cut off, you know, from the rest of the world because of how other people perceive you. I'm just me. I like people. I'm lucky enough to play in what I think is one hell of a band, and we do something unique and interesting to audiences. And when people leave a Cowboy Mouse show, 9 times out of 10, they feel 1,000 times better than when they came in, you know?
And I see that you guys are out there playing some really interesting venues and shows. I've seen you on, you know, in a pool, I think, or on a beach. And does that kind of keep it exciting for you playing these new and interesting and fun places? Because at this point, if you're a Cowboy Mouth fan, I'm sure that you have a section of your audience that's younger, but I would say most of them are probably my age, in their 40s or so. So,
you know, it's mixed. It's like, my wife was pointing out when we played Mardi Gras the other day at House of Blues in New Orleans, you know, the number of young kids, like they're like 19, 20s, things like that. And, you know, and they knew the words sometimes better than I did, you know, because I'll blank out. But I mean, it's not really, you know, it's the music, it's the presentation. But for Cowboy Mouth is like is one of the best descriptions I ever heard, was just a few years back, this giant, tall, good old boy from like Alabama or Georgia. Couldn't have been nicer. Nice guy. He comes up and says, "Man, I love you guys. Y'all are like a gospel tent revival without the religion." I was like, I like that. That's good. So, you know, and that's kind of what it is. You know, it's definitely a display of energy, enthusiasm, emotion, you know, and it's just supposed to be a big, giant, swirling joygasm. And that's what a Cowboy Mouth show is.
And do you think the mixture of all the genres that you guys kind of throw into your sound, do you think that also keeps it interesting? Because, you know, obviously rock and blues, and there's some punk in there, and now even some country with Like a Love Song is actually getting some country airplay. Is that right?
Yeah, Like a Love Song is getting some country airplay. It keeps it interesting for us, you know? I mean, you know, some of my old favorite bands are bands like, obviously, you know, the Beatles, but, you know, also bands like The Replacement, who you never knew what they were going to put out, but you knew it was going to be good. And they did all kinds of stuff. They did rock, they did punk, they did some country, they did rockabilly. One of their biggest hits was a rockabilly song, you know. And it's just, I like that idea of not being lumped into one category. This is X band and they do this, they do A, B, and C. And I like being able to do whatever the hell we want to do, you know. We're as much of fans as we are of Green Day and the Sex Pistols, were also, you know, that much a fan of like Hank Williams and Patsy Cline, you know. So, you know, it's just, I don't like being limited. So pretty much whatever comes into my pointed little head, I'm willing to do.
I have to ask you about your relationship with Guy Fieri. I see him on a lot of your videos coming up, doing songs with you. How did that relationship happen? How did that connection happen?
Oh, he's an old buddy, man. I knew him. I knew him before, you know, he became a TV star. We were playing the show. We were doing a countrywide tour. It was a co-headline with us and another band from New Orleans called Better Than Ezra. And all the shows were sold out and packed except this one show in Modesto, California, of all places. I don't know what happened, but, you know, all the other shows were packed, you know, hundreds, sometimes, you know, thousands of people. And we played in Modesto, and there was only like 40 or 50 tickets sold for this 900-seat room. And I remember, that could be a pretty daunting thing for a band, but I kind of enjoy that situation. Not that I want to play it all the time, but I enjoy it simply because it's a challenge. You know, how can I do this? Live performing is always a challenge, right? So Guy and a couple of friends of his, this was long before he was anybody, you know, long before Food Network and all that stuff. But he's always been, you know, he's always dressed like he dresses and does his hair like he does it. And I remember we were playing and he's in the back of the venue sitting at a table with these other guys, right? And just giving me the stink eye, like, you know, who the hell is this, you know? And so during the show, I figured, why not mess with him, you know? So I jumped off the drums, jumped off the stage. The band was still playing. I jumped off and walked over and jumped on his table right in front of him. And I'm like crotch level to his face.
You know? Funny.
And I'm like, listen, I don't know who you are. I don't care who you are. But if you guys don't start having some fun, I'm going to be talking a lot of crap about all of you. So you might as well get up and enjoy yourself. At that moment, he just starts laughing his ass off. And, you know, he came up and the show ended up being a blast. And we were friends. We've been friends ever since. That was like, that was over 20 years ago. God, that was like 25 years ago. So
that's super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then it was funny because, you know, we became friends, you know, and it was funny because I was one of the folks he called and he said, hey, man, I'm thinking of trying out for this Food Network thing. What do you think? And I was like, dude, you should do it. It'd be great. You know, if nothing else, it'll give you, you know, give some good publicity for your restaurants, because he owned a couple of restaurants in the Bay Area at the time, you know, just a local restaurateur, you know. And then he's like, all right, you know, people tell me I need to do it. I was like, yeah, you need to do this. So and it was I had forgotten about this, but he told me this story recently. He said he announced he was introducing us at a show, and he told this story, and I totally forgot about it. When things were starting to go really like big for him, real fast, and he asked me, you know, because you know I dealt with you know craziness and stuff. He asked me, you know, how to handle it, and I said, dude, just be honest in all your business dealings. Be honest in all your business dealings. Don't ever try to get one over on somebody else, and don't let somebody get one over on you. The best way to have a business dealing is that both sides win. Number one, and number two, always treat your fans with dignity and respect, you know, because they're human beings, and you know, they're coming to you for some sort of, you know, they're coming to you. They're making your dreams come true. I mean, they're making your dreams come true. And all they ask is for a little acknowledgement. Always be gracious and kind to your fans. So, and I'd forgotten that I told them all that stuff. So we've just been friends for a while. We have a text thread going, me, him, a guy named Panini Pete in South Alabama, and a guy named Stretch who owns Grinders, which is a great pizza joint in Kansas City. And we just have a text thread. We keep in touch. And I like to send out, you know, really messed up memes about once a week. You know?
The get no response, right? You're that guy.
No. They try to challenge me, and they always lose.
Funny.
Bow to the master, Fieri. Great dudes. You know, I'm very happy to count all those guys up as my friends. You know,
that's great. And I'd say that's pretty profound and good advice for anybody listening out there.
You just learn in life. You just learn in life that, you know, we're all shown these commercials and television shows pretty much from birth of, you know, you would need to make all the money, you need to, you know, to hell with the other guy. But and I've been around long enough to understand that how you treat the other guy is how the other guy is more than likely to treat you. And so if you're fair with everybody and you try to give the benefit of the doubt to, you know, most people, not all people, but most people, you know, it comes back to you in really, really wonderful ways that you'd never expect.
You know, having the longevity of your career like you've had, do Do you ever have younger artists reach out for advice or ask sure. for advice?
Sure. Yeah, I get that all the time. I get it all the time.
And is some of the things that you're saying here, is that some of the things that you tell them as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, you know, it's, you know, the energy you put out in the world is the energy you get back. Simple. It's really simple. It's not that difficult. And, you know, if you want to go out and be an a-hole and make tons of money and yada yada, become super uber rich and all that type of stuff, there's nothing wrong with it. But, you know, in the long run, all that bad energy is going to come back to you. Everything in life is energy, you know, and what you put out there is what you get back. You know, it's all just a giant circle of life. You know, it's, I've just learned that, you know, what you give of yourself is what you're giving back. And that's pretty simple, pretty much. Which is why I always try to make the Cowboy Mouse show an experience. The live thing is still challenging. I mean, I could have done like producing and all that type of stuff, and I enjoy it, but, you know, I didn't want to be stuck in the same situation over and over again. The live show, the live Cowboy Mouse show, is still always a challenge to me. After all these years, every night I still get excited. I still try to find new ways to convey things, new ways to do things, new places to bring the audience, new places for the audience to bring us. You know, it's still really fun, and I'm actually enjoying it a lot more now than I ever have, because I'm not dealing with a lot of the corporate pressure and BS. You know, it's like, it's our thing, we'll do it our way, and, you know, we've done really well. I can't complain, you know.
I think the audience can definitely tell that. You know, even when you play Jenny Says, everybody knows that it's Jenny Says, but you put your own little twist and turn on it, maybe to keep it interesting, maybe to keep it interesting for the crowd. But tell us about
it. It's not a matter of keeping it interesting. I guess, let me try to put that a better way. Continue to make it a challenge, you know? I mean, like, you know, we're doing some different things with Jenny Says now that we just started doing, just to make it challenging, to make it something that creatively enjoyable for us, you know. But I mean, you know, I like to think that the songs are good, you know. I mean, we had this producer guy named John Hampton out of Memphis, a great producer. He produced the Gin Blossoms big albums, and he worked with the Replacements on some stuff. Really talented guy. He told me once, he's like, man, you know, you guys, your songs are like nursery rhymes for adults. And I'm like, that's it. So I mean, you know, the songs aren't Cowboy Mouse is not a hard band to like, you know. We try to make a lot of things very accessible. I'm not, you know, on one level, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but on the other hand, we're not trying to, you know, we're not sitting around with our thumbs up our butts hoping to be invited to the cool kids party, you know. Like, the party begins and ends right here, baby. If you want to be a part of it, great. And if you don't, good luck.
Do you think that's self-awareness?
It just comes with time. You do anything like this for as long as we've done it, I mean, you just, if you don't learn and you don't learn to adapt, then you falter and you fall by the wayside. And here we are, you know, we were on what, MCA Records and then Atlantic, an Atlantic subsidiary. And, you know, both of those pretty powerful major labels, they're both gone. We're still here. So there you go.
I'm a little bit biased here. I want to know your opinion. I think the 90s, you mentioned better than Ezra, the Replacements, uh-huh. Hootie, Gin Blossoms, you know, even Sister the grunge Hazel. Stuff. Yeah, all that. Do you think the 90s was one of the best decades or time periods for music?
I do. And, you know, I'm biased too. But here's the deal. You know, the two things that get all the attention was the beginning of the 90s and the end of the 90s. Beginning, where you had grunge and sludge, which was great. You know, Nirvana, Soundgarden, even Pearl Jam. You know, it's great rock bands, but it's that same attitude, you know, that same kind of nihilism, you know, that type of thing. And then later in the decade, where you had, on one extreme, you had Britney Spears, NSYNC, all that stuff. And on the other spectrum, you had, you know, nu metal, you know, both very validated, you know, genres of music and, you know, different audiences and things like that. You know? But there was this little time period right in the middle of the 90s that a lot of people don't talk about. And it was bands like us. It was bands like Hootie, bands like Better Than Ezra, Gin Blossoms, Edwin McCain, Sister Hazel. You know, all bands that were really interested in songcraft. And, you know, it wasn't really as much about the attitude as much as it was the songs and the performance of the songs and the arrangements, you know. because there was a lot of great songs written back then, you know, like Ezra, they had like, they had Good and Desperately Wanting and, you know, King of New Orleans, Sister Hazel, Champagne High, All For You, and, you know, Gin Blossoms, you know, they have so many great songs. I mean, there was this little middle area, middle time period in the middle 90s, I guess from about 93 to about 97, where, you know, just a rock and roll band that wasn't grungy or wasn't like heavy duty, you know, could actually get attention from the media matrix and, you know, be validated and, you know, creating quality stuff, you know.
Do you find it interesting that a lot of the bands that we're talking about is still, they're still around and they're still doing it, they're still playing?
Well, I think the thing about it is like, you know, sure, you know, it's a business. You have to run it like a business, but I think a lot of those bands, they just enjoy it still, you know? And, you know, it's weird because, you know, I like to think that we've always been a pretty potent live force because that's what I set out to do from day one, to have a really, you know, intense live experience because, you know, number one, that's who I am as a performer. But number two, it's the only thing nobody could steal from me. You know, they can steal songs, they can steal recordings, they can steal money, but they can't steal me, you know? And but I mean, you know, you have some of those bands, you know, Hootie was great during their heyday, but they're better now. Ezra was really great in their heyday, but they're better bands now. You know, it's like they're really, you know, it's bands that are interested in songs and performance and things like that, they just get better over time, you know?
When I think about that time period, one of the bands, well, actually one of my favorite bands, they actually, I think in some circles, they're called like a one-hit wonder band, but they were so much more than that, and that's Blind Melon.
Yeah, exactly. That's weird that you mentioned that I lived right around the corner from that club where Hoon was when he died. Yeah, and I was riding my bike around there. Had the day off. I had a few days off, and I was riding my bike around Tipitina's, which was the club where they were supposed to play that night, and I saw the tour bus. Then I saw a bunch of, you know, activity around. It's like, uh-oh, something's up. And then I heard, you know, that he had died and stuff. So, but, yeah, they're, you know, just great song bands, you know? And, I mean, there's so many, like Sister Hazel, like I mentioned them before. They're actually a better band now than they were back then, and they were great back then, you know? So that's always been interesting to see. That's been fun to see.
This is a Midwest Mixtape Podcast and KLMZ, The Zone, and we are excited to have Cowboy Mouth. We actually have the date now, Fred. That is March 30th at the Old Rock House, Cowboy Mouth. It's all ages. Doors are at 7, shows at 8, $30, tickets in advance. Fred, we really appreciate your time today and can't wait to have you back in town.
My pleasure, man. I'm looking very forward to coming down to St. Louis, Missouri, because St. Louis is always a boatload of laughs for us. We always have a great time there.
Thanks, Fred. Have a good day.
Hey, you too, man. Thank you for everything, and come say hello at the Rock House.
I've no reason for the things I fear, the things that plague me when I see and hear. Dime's a nickel and a nickel's none. I throw myself into the Sunday sun. A summer Sunday when you've been insane. You said you're going, but I said I came. I'm throwing oranges in an apple cart. The ties that bind are tearing me apart. Jenny says, turn off the radio. Jenny says, turn off the light. Jenny says, turn off the video. You beat yourself up to bring yourself down. Let it go, let it go, let it go.
Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked for you, more scheduling flexibility, and at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/the barn. That's betterhelp.com/the barn.